Well, hello everybody, to this first of a series of webinars, which Tuya and I, and especially Tuya, has encouraged to more deeply understand the science of triangles. If you look right ahead at this very daunting map from A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, you're going to see how many triangles there are in this large map of the cosmic planes. Now, you know, we're not going to dive right into that, but it's a profound subject. I'll tell you what, allow me to do this and say hi to everybody. If my face freezes in some ungainly grimace, please excuse it. I'm here in the in Phoenix, and Tuya is in Finland, and we're backed by our staff, Brett and Joe, who are helping us through all the technical matters. Well, we have a very important time coming up now, and let's see if I can... we're doing this tonight. This is night here in the sort of USR headquarters here in Phoenix. But it's GMT. It's quite early in the morning. So I hope that some of the people in Europe have been able to join us as well. I think it's a rather reasonable and sane time for Australia. And for some people in America, it's on the... well, it's 1 o'clock in the morning. What can I say? But these webinars will be available to people on Makara, and we can study them as we wish. The subject is so amazingly profound. You know, in one way, it's very, very simple. We live on a planet which is inwardly sacred, and outwardly not yet sacred. And the time equation there is not really explained. Perhaps it will be the period of the judgment day, the true judgment day, in the fifth round, when the only members of the human race who will remain on this planet are those who are actually on the path and all the way up to the sixth and seventh initiation, and others who are not there yet will be directed to other more subtle planes for some sort of education. We don't know what it will be, and probably to the planet Mars. This is the classic separation of the sheep and the goats. Well, in order to make our planet sacred, obviously it's not totally in our hands, the etheric network of the planet has to be transformed from a pattern of squares into a pattern of triangles. Now, there are a number of non-sacred planets, such as ours is. Our planet is a bit more sacred than Mars at the moment, which undoubtedly has the pattern of squares, and other hidden planets and planets like Pluto and so forth, they have the square pattern. But we're in the process, as the Tibetan has described, a great teacher who taught him, probably Pythagoras, we're in the process of esoterically bisecting the square into two triangles. And his teacher taught him how to do that. Okay, you know, we may think of what the method may be, and I have a feeling that as we study this profound section over the weeks and longer times, of the science of triangles, we will learn a little more about how to esoterically bisect the square and be among those human beings who help to transform the pattern of squares into an etheric pattern of triangles, so that the soul aspect, and the soul aspect is so often called the triangles, you know, may penetrate into the etheric realm. And that's one of its first major places of penetration. If you read Rule 10 in the Rays and the Initiations, a great book, you know, by the Tibetan, you see that the work has to be done on the etheric plane first, which will automatically transfer it to the physical, and only then, perhaps, will the attack on glamour on the astral plane, where the Black Lodge has its headquarters, so to speak, at least in the planetary sense, only then will that attack be really launched, and a clarification will occur. We have so much work in front of us, but the simplicity of it is that we have to have lighted relationships, we have to have loving relationships, and we have to have filled with goodwill, you know, which we understand is love in action, and we have to have relationships eventually in which the will to good predominates. Now, there are different types of triangles, and we have to form them with two other people. This is all quite obvious, and DK says, well, don't make the work too simple and don't make it too complex, but there is a profound simplicity in it if we have real depth of feeling in our relationship with our two other triangle members. And some of us have, you know, little networks of triangles which are part of the greater network, and obviously one would encourage everybody to get involved. Now, the Lucis Trust has had a triangles desk, a dedicated triangles desk, for a long, long time, and they've gleaned many of the writings, and they send them out periodically and so forth. We're not going to do that. You know, you can certainly sign up with them and receive their periodical sendings, which are very illuminating. They are, you know, the work of the Tibetan, and they are very educative. What we'll try to do is have more of the webinar approach so we can discuss the matter amongst ourselves. And, you know, this is, in a way, it's a science of the soul, this science of triangles, but you cannot help but realize that the triangle is a threefold structure, very intimately related to the third ray, to the atmic plane, which is the third plane, and to the planet Saturn's, and hence to the science of astrology and how astrology and reality interact. So I look at this series of programs, which we will be presenting, as a very good opportunity to deepen our occultism. Now, right now and immediately, our issue is the final for this period. It's never final. Another 250 years, it'll occur again, but the final conjunction of Pluto with the great magical star Vega, the star of incantation, the star of the magical word, the star of charisma, and the of the hypnotic power, of words of power, used properly, or from the standpoint of the divine plan, not used properly, used improperly. And tomorrow, Atuya will be presenting a broadcast at 2:30 p.m. GMT. When I say tomorrow, I mean on the 15th. And let's see if I have somewhere here. I think I should have the links. Yes, and I'll tell you what I'll do. This is my attempt to give you the links that are for the broadcast forthcoming. So this Pluto-Vega conjunction opposed Sirius service meditation broadcast, that's tomorrow, or at least tomorrow for me, and maybe for some of you it's already the 15th. And then also another broadcast will also occur, at least for me tomorrow, but for many of you on the 16th. So I'm going to hopefully do something that is not filling up the chat box excessively, no doubt it will. And I'm going to give you those links, which you can, I don't know, have I overdone it? Brett and Joe. I'm not sure that I could get all that in. Yeah, they're all in there. So if you want to just copy those two links, you'll be able to join us for the Pluto conjunct Vega. Last opportunity, very important opportunity, and we'll, discuss some of what we might expect out of that tomorrow or the 15th at 2:30 p.m. GMT, and then later at I think it's going to be 5 a.m. Good luck, 5 a.m. GMT on the morning of the 16th. My colleague Harold Moses and I have just finished the Scorpio solar fire ritual oratorio meditation, and we're going to be broadcasting that, and that will be your opportunity for a couple of hours to go into deep meditation with music and oratory and get a picture of what it looks like, what the challenges of Scorpio really look like from the evolutionary perspective. And hopefully the it will be also an aesthetic experience. So those two things are in your chat box, those two links, and you can join us. Now, I have some things of a general nature to say about the great science of triangles, but I do want to, in general, say that at this moment, the main thing that's on my mind and Tuya's mind and the mind of a number of us who are looking at the stellar configurations is Pluto in relation to Vega and Sirius. Now, Vega and Sirius are always opposed to each other in the sky. That's just how they're part of the chakric system of the seven solar systems of which ours is one. Our sun, Sol, Helios, whatever you want to name our sun, is a great heart center in something. And what the heart center is in is a cosmic logos. Now, if I were to turn to, let's see, I'm gonna give this a shot and see if I can do this. The Alice Bailey books, and yep, there they are. Only I'll try to make them a little bigger because it'll be easier to see. I want to turn to a certain page that I hope I can remember. Excuse me. And it's in a treatise on cosmic fire. And it gives us a sense of the structure of things, which we always want to know the larger structure of things because that's the occult way. And then you work your way down. So in this treatise of cosmic fire, I believe that if you turn to page, here's hoping, 293. Ho, 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 ho. Wait a second. That's not what we want. We want just a single click and 293. And let's see if that's the right page. It is. And we see a very important structure of how things are organized in our local cosmos system. And the important thing to realize is that our solar logos is actually a chakra in a cosmic logos. This is not yet the one about whom naught may be said, about which we hear so much and know so little. And so are Sirius and Vega. Now, there may be a question as to which chakras they represent. Does in this great being, does Sirius represent, in fact, the head center? Does Vega, with its magical incantations, represent in some way the throat center? These are being worked out by astrologers, and there are a number of thoughts about what is involved here. But suffice it to say, when we have a conjunction, an ongoing conjunction between Sirius and Vega, it represents a dynamic flow within the cosmic logos of in which Our solar system, our sun, is a great heart center. Now, when good old Pluto comes along, you know, dragging things to the surface and healing or destroying accordingly, we have a very great opportunity. Now, we need to purify, we need to heal the circumstances in which we live at this time, but we've seen Pluto used for destructive purposes too. If you think of the American election that we've just had and the repercussions of that right now, Pluto has been used to great effect with various mantrums that the unenlightened, who's not unenlightened, I guess we're all unenlightened, but the unenlightened people use these mantrums to reinforce certain separative attitudes. Well, that's extremely Plutonic as it works with Vega. On the other hand, the occultist, the true white esotericist, uses certain great words of power, which the Tibetan has taught us about. And these words of power are supposed to bring in the divine plan reflecting the divine purpose and to get rid of the poison in our system and thus heal us. So what we say, what we think, according to the magical charismatic star Vega, conjunct Pluto, has the power to kill us or to resurrect and heal us. And we've been seeing that now. And of course, it will carry on. Pluto is very, very important these days. It's in the sign of initiation Capricorn, and it will be there until I think the year 2024, or just about in 2025, it changes positions. And that, of course, is the really important date that the Tibetan has given us for the great hierarchical conclave. And at this conclave, plans will be laid for the, in all probability, he says, for the first stages of the real externalization of the hierarchy and preparing the way for the reappearance of the Christ. So we've got a lot of house cleaning to do. The Christ cannot return until we all clean house, until there's a measure of peace, and until we are sharing to a degree in humanity. And Pluto is dragging all this selfishness to the surface. And maybe we're now going to see what is the nature of the selfishness under which humanity has been laboring, and under Pluto have a chance to eject it away from the initiatory potential of the first initiation which humanity will be taking. Now, I don't think it's any time immediately soon, because we've been told that when the Christ reappears, and at first the hierarchy has to do a lot of things, it will indicate that humanity has taken the first initiation. So there's a lot of work to be done, and when we work in the triangles using the powers of the sky and also just the general powers of Sirius, very, very important, and the powers of the atmic plane and the third ray and Saturn and all of that, when we work with the triangles, we are preparing the way. It's so obvious that soul energy has penetrated some aspects of human consciousness, but there are just wide, wide, darkened areas which are still selfish and are still under the effect of the elemental life. So we think it's very important. Hopefully you can join us at 2:30 GMT on the 15th for our broadcast meditation service, and we'll be considering the nature of the Pluto-Vega conjunction, and like I say, Vega is always opposite to Sirius, at least in our current times and for the foreseeable future. Marshall. Well, yes, Brett, is that you?
No, Tuya.
Oh, Tuya. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, yes, dear. Sorry. Okay, dear, go ahead.
Good morning. Good morning to everybody. It's morning here in Finland. I wanted to say a few things about this all today and the energy which has been passing about 2 years. related to Pluto in Capricorn and this opposition to Sirius, which is very, very important. In the symbolic way, what we can look these energies is that when Pluto is in Capricorn, it can symbolize and indicate the possibilities for the Black Lords to really work in the material sense. Capricorn, which is related to governments, all of these tendencies in humanity which are related to power. And now when Pluto is with Vega, the Vega also traditionally is related to politics. But because Lyra, Vega is found in the constellation of Lyra. Lyra was given to Jupiter by Hermes, Mercury. It triggers in one sense, in the lower consciousness of humanity, all kinds of tendencies to lies, to unloyal ways of working. And when it is with Vega, which is a lot of expressing about the Holy Spirit and the Word, how the Word is used, in Lyra there are tendencies, and in relationship to Vega, the tendencies of luring. So using magical powers, Mercury is also a magician, using those magical powers for fooling others. So all of these ways for Black Lords to work at this time is very potent. This time had to come, and this is also some challenge during this time of the Forerunners. That is for us the most important thing to realize. This is the time of Forerunners, and we must invoke these higher beings through us, through our common and collective standing together, so that these energies, higher energies, can work into the human consciousness. And this time, which is very, very special, is that also the moon is the closest to Earth for 70 years. So there are many things happening at the time, these cycles which are co-working, or co, what's the word in English, co-happening?
Cooperating or coincidental?
Coinciding at the moment is a very amazing to see that it is really so that all the time during these years something is happening in the heavens at this time, which is not happening for a longer time before or even after. So now these things are happening. This is the time of the Forerunner. We have been called and we have been signed. We have been accepting to work now together. And now the why these triangles are so important for us to understand is that because those great entities who were coming to help and who were coming from extraterrestrial realms, the Buddhas of activity, can work and use these triangles in the times of emergency. We cannot say is that this kind of time, but in my opinion it is, because this is the time of the Forerunner. Now all the higher ones in hierarchy, in Shambhala, are trying to see how we are fitting to this coming new time, new age, how we are fitting to the plan of hierarchy, how we are fitting to work with the Christ. Do we recognize the Christ at this time? So this work in triangles is implementing how we are going to work in the future in humanity. In triangles, there is an occult law behind this work. It is seen, the triangle or triangular system is seen over and over again if we study in minor cosmos or nature cosmos, we see it. And when Sirius is, we know that Sirius is the source which is now directing the whole solar system into the next step. So this day for all of us, if we really understand it, we have the powers of Vega, which is related to the throat center in that sense that we can nounce, we can express our will in this whole process. And this is now the last time. We still have 8 years to go, a little bit more than 8 years to go, the time of the forerunner. But now, dearest friends, we have huge possibility of using these energies, remembering that this time also the moon is giving for us the platform, because the moon can be seen in many different ways. It is related to the lower self, but because of that door, we can express in these lower energies the higher will, the higher purpose, the direction that we are going to take, and demand it, because that is also our right. We can demand in much more powerful ways to stand in the light, the whole humanity to stand in the light.
Thank you, Tuya, for those thoughts. You know, many of us are experiencing the supermoon. When you go outside and you look at this, especially when it's rising, it's just almost an overwhelming sight, the brightness, the size, and so forth. But we do have to remember that we have just experienced and are still within the flow of the Scorpio full moon. And the interesting thing there is that the moon, representing the elemental nature of humanity and the past, has to fall in the sign Scorpio. And yet we see the elemental life has taken on a new strength, and the popular psyche, which is still unredeemed, is rising strongly. So this is one interpretation of the presence of the moon. Just the way some few years ago, Mars came the closest to the Earth that it had been in, 70,000 years, something of that nature. And we've seen a tremendous uprising of the Martian energy. Now, when you look at Mars and the moon together, they do represent the personal elemental sphere. Every area of the personality is in a way ruled by the moon elementally, and as the Tibetan said, Mars rules the entire personality and every vehicle within the personality, perhaps not the etheric body, but certainly the dense physical body, the emotional, and the lower mental vehicle. So we are certainly presented with the challenges that Pluto is raising to the surface and forcing us to confront the personality or the dweller on the threshold of humanity. Every one of the great wars has been about the dweller and the angel. And so far it seems, at least partially, that the angel is prevailing. But it simply must prevail at this time, or we are in for, maybe for the first time, a true shambolic intervention into the affairs of man, and what he warned of as a religious war in which the sixth ray would wreak great destruction, and in which humanity might have to go back to the very beginning and an experiment made to see whether it would be possible to raise a humanity which truly conformed to divine law and the divine plan. So, yes, dear.
Yes, addition to this, what you were pointing out, the moon and the etheric field, is exactly the possibility for us. The same way, the same idea, how the solar angels were descending from Sirius, and that pattern, we here representing the inner purpose on physical plane, via triangles, we are exactly have the possibility to change the transform the squarely etheric field into the triangular field. So
Yes.
today, when we have the still the effect of the full moon over in Scorpio, which is a huge sign of victory, this is everything laid for us today to work with these energies in conscious ways and use them, really form this formation in the etheric field of humanity and planet Earth, and
Yes.
use these energies today.
Yes, this is a point of concentration. Of course, you know, in the long run, it's going to take a long time, but every effort that we have will certainly be of value at this time, and we simply must win this one, if I can put it that way. You know how the Tibetans said, well, look, if in World War II there had been enough disciples of an active nature, that war could have been retained on the psychological levels instead of precipitating on the outer level. Now we're faced with the same issue. Dire possibilities do exist. The Tibetan wrote about them in the very first edition, the introduction to the very first edition of The Problems of Humanity. And then since that time, it's harder to get a hold of those writings. But suffice it to say, he gave us a great warning. And therefore, every disciple at this time is mobilized, whatever talents, interests, abilities, skills that each one of us has, we're called upon to express that fully. And of course, one of the most important things right now is to bring sacredness into human consciousness and human expression. And that's where the redemption of the etheric plane, but it's not just the etheric plane, of course, it's via the ethers, but the emotions are involved, the mind is involved, the soul is involved. The redemption of humanity through the proper use of this redeeming force of the triangles network. Now, behind that, there's all kinds of occult, you know, amazing complexity, and we'll try to go through some of that. You know, I don't know if all of you like astrology and rheology, but you cannot really study the triangles unless you're willing to get into the specifics of the energies involved. There's this marvelous section in Esoteric Astrology from page 404 to page 500, which is called The Science of Triangles. And it shows you how absolutely pervasive the triangles are, all the way from the universal level down into the most mundane aspects of our temporary physical form and our international and national relationships. So we're going to look forward to studying that. It won't be an easy study, but I think it will be an interesting one. Now, I think it would be well to pause here for a little bit. I mean, we're not going to get into all of the details of that Science of Triangles section right now. Our work is focused now on Pluto and Vega, and we will have a little meditation, a little reflection on triangles right now before we leave this program. As probably some of you know, Atuya and I have developed the ASK program. Excuse me. Ask and you shall receive. Knock and it shall be opened unto you. No, ASK, seek and you shall find. Knock and it shall be opened to you. ASK. Alice Bailey talked about that. And it's really a method of disciples getting together and invoking the higher energies. You have to ask before the response can come. It's a just very practical approach to the science of invocation. And Olivia Hansen and Tuya and I are also promoting a deeper understanding of the glamour work. Now, I know many of you are really working in this field. Some of you have done much, much more work in the field of triangles than we have yet done. And absolutely, and I salute you for that work, Starling, Hunter, and others who, Luna Huffines and so forth, have been working deeply in these areas for years. Our purpose, however, is simply to add our strength to the general expression of cooperation with the hierarchy along these lines. The more the merrier. Nobody owns this. It's all of us cooperating to try to sacredize, make sacred our planet so we can all help each other along the way. Now, we've had kind of a half hour of discussion here a little bit, and what we'd like to do is open the floor to anybody who has some thoughts along these lines, and if you raise your hand, we will call upon you, you know, in some kind of order. Yeah, dear. No, you can't. So you'll just have to. The organizers don't have a hand. They
but
have to.
There are hands already.
They just have to come in when they want to come in. So just come in when you want to come in, when there's an opening or whatever. Just say Michael or whatever, you know, so I don't ramble on. And, you know, the organizers can also speak. Okay, so now.
There are hands, Michael.
Yes.
Already.
Yes, there are. Now, actually, Sue, you've had your hand up for a half hour here, so I'm, it was before we even started the program, so do you have a question or a statement, Sue Norman? Or is there a connection issue? There might be a connection issue. Anyway, Joe and Brett, maybe you can straighten that out with Sue and see if there's something that we can do to help. Now, are there any, there are some 58 of us gathered here. It's very nice. I know that English is not the first language of everybody present. So, you know, don't worry about the absolute correctness of speech. We Americans don't speak multiple languages the way some of you do. So we're just very happy if you have something you would like to say. Or question, just go ahead, or you can write a question, and Brett will either send it to me or I will see it. So is there anybody up to this point that would like to question something, say something, remark about the matters we have been discussing? Is there anybody who would like to do that? Okay, it looks like Helen has a question, Brett, is that correct? Okay. So, hi, Tuya, would it be possible for you to talk a little louder? Oh, you don't want that, Helen. Tuya, did you hear that? Tuya, did
yes,
you hear
I
that?
Yes, I heard. I'm sorry.
No, but listen, sometimes you... You hear the sound, strange sounds of snoring next to Tuya. Well, you know, we have three chihuahuas there, and one of them is a Taurus and has a snoring problem. Okay, so maybe Tuya is trying not to wake up the dogs or something. Anyway.
I'm sorry.
We'll do our best, Helen. And Tuya, you know, a little louder. Hopefully the dogs won't start to bark. Okay. Okay, very good. Okay, and how powerful is prayer at this time? Well, even, you know, Jesus prayed. The Christ prayed. What the Tibetan asks for in our meditation is often a prayerful attitude. And that is part of the great science of invocation, isn't it? So it is very powerful. And it becomes more powerful when we ask in the name of the Lord Maitreya. He for whom the whole world waits has said that whatsoever shall be asked in his name with faith in the result or response shall see it accomplished. But the key is in his name. It's a selfless kind of prayer for the expression of the divine plan, and then the prayer is powerful. Now, if we're just using the normal solar plexus prayer the way so many people do, you know, okay, people do what they do, but it's not the same as selflessly asking in the name of the great Lord and the name of the plan which he serves. Then Prayer is extremely powerful and part of the science of invocation. So I would definitely engage in that as long as the element of selfishness has been purged from the prayer. Okay, Helen. Any other statements? Or, okay, let's see now. There's a hand up here. Yeah, go ahead, Brett.
Sterling has his hand up.
Starling has his hand up. Is that what you're saying? Starling. Yes, Starling, please go ahead.
Can you hear me okay?
Yes, quite well, very clearly. Thank you.
Hello from sunny Doha, Qatar. As you know, I teach here in the Middle East every fall semester, so got class in about 45 minutes or so, but just I've been listening while and enjoying the webinar. I just wanted to quickly say thank you for the gracious recognition of some of the work that I and others have been doing over the last several years. And I offer this in a very humble way, I wanted to let you know that I had done a couple of books as part of the Compass of Light series, the last two, volumes 6 and 7. One of them was called Triangles in the Great Invocation, and the other one is, the last volume is called Heaven and Earth in the Great Invocation. And in the last one, I drew upon a great deal of that material from Science of Triangles section of Esoteric Astrology.
Yeah.
and used some network analysis techniques to render those triangles as, show the connections all the way from Polaris, Great Bear, Sirius, and the Pleiades, all the way down to humanity, and then further down the line, so that they make a sort of connected network. And those images are there. The writing's there. It's fairly short. And if you want to use any of that material in webinars, by all means, be my guest.
Starling, how can we, you've done great work in this and very persistently as well. How can we access these writings?
While you were chatting a few moments ago, I sent you an email because I couldn't figure out this web of how to raise my hand. So I sent you an email, and so you'll see a couple of links there for, and also attached them to the attached them to the email and provided links as well.
Okay, that's great. I don't know if I can maneuver that right this moment, but I will try. And it's like I say, you and some others have really done yeoman's work in this field. And I see the thing about the webinars is to help get the information into people so it becomes a living thought. And can be somehow applied. That's the thing, and that's the purpose. Because some of it seems, very abstract and very remote. But I think the more we discuss it, and the more the qualities of these energies appear to us, the more livingly they will be part of our lives. And I think that would be, one of the purposes of such webinars as we are proposing. So thank you very much for that generous offer. And I'll see if I can get to with that email and then put that in the chat box so people can access some of your writings. That would be excellent. Okay, thank you.
I was just going to say quickly, if I can figure out how to get a URL into the chat box, and if that's okay, I can try getting one of those in there. I just have to learn this interface. But either way, I know that it will go out to the people that need to now that you're aware of it. So
maybe we can do something here, Brett. If we made Starling into an organizer, would he be able to put those links into the chat box?
He should be able
to
do that.
Question box.
What is it, Joe? You said
in the question box. In the question box. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Well, see if you can do that first, Starling. That would be the quickest way.
I see that now. I just put in a line that said test, and it looks like it might have showed up. So if that's visible to other people, then I can go ahead and put in a URL as well.
Yeah, it did. It showed up. Excellent. Okay, fantastic. All right, then everybody can copy that and have access to Starling's thought and writings on these matters, which will be important for us. I mean, look, this is a, I think the Tibetan must be an expert in the science of triangles. It's always been my impression about the Tibetan, if I may say so, just the way the Buddha is a third ray monad, and which is pretty obvious from cosmic fire, I believe the Tibetan is too, with a second ray soul. I've always thought there are two monadic rays. I'll get into that at some point. But anyway, one aspect of the spirit, I believe, is on the third ray. And the natural way of expression for the high third ray types is through a triangular thought and the realization of the triangular structure of the organization of our cosmos. So he says it's very dear to my heart, very close to my heart, the triangles work. And, of course, this is not only in the practical sense, because he's given us a marvelous way of relating to each other in a practical sense through a light, love, and power, but he's given us the theory behind all this stuff. And some of it is really amazing, and we see the far-reaching triangular organization, such as Starling was discussing, that exists within our local cosmosphere. And, you know, if you look at this thing, let's see if I can get there. All the way up on the highest cosmic plane of which he says anything, and there are many beyond it, of course, you have a being, a triangular being, called a cosmic Parabrahman. Now, that's not the same as Parabrahm, you know, which is an absolute being, but it is a great triangular being, and when you see all these other triangles, all these lesser triangles, in my view at least, who are found within these seven circles on the cosmic monadic plane, every one of those triangles is, from my perspective, what we call a one about whom naught may be said. So these great beings are organized in triangular form, but let us always remember what we call the point within the triangle. You know, I'm just going to put that up there in a different sense, if you don't mind. Get rid of get rid of that presence for a moment, and I'll just talk to you this way. The cosmic perspective on triangles is really amazing, and of course, for some of you who have the patience for it, we're going to do that. But every one of these great beings is represented as a triangle or as a great circle with triangles within it. And the important thing to realize is that there is always a fourth point. There's always a tetrahedron. There's always a point of pure being within any triangle. And this is true, you know, how we're organized as well. You know, if you look at, this is a human being, and we have a very triangular organization. The threefold personality is in a way triangular. The threefold soul or egoic lotus is triangular. The spiritual triad is obviously triangular, and the monad itself is triangular, although also 12-fold in another way. But within each one of these triangles is the presence, and that's what we have to understand, that somehow we are the presence within a threefold structure which operates from the very highest possibilities of expression that we have all the way down to our most mundane type of expression. That point within the triangle is an amazing idea, and it is the point of pure being, the heart of the monad, the very essence of the monad, the essence of being within every triangle. And this goes as well for the great universal triangle. In other words, in my view, my theories, there's something called a universal logos. It's the ultimate logos of any universe. And it has a threefold structure, but its nature of being is at the heart of the triangle, of that a great universal triangle from which comes everything that we recognize in any particular universe, and there are many. So, you know, we are, you know, we're monad, soul and personality. There's a triangle there. We also Our chakras unfold in triangular fashion according to our monadic ray. When we're trying to evolve, different triangles are formed within our etheric and our other fields, and there's a law concerning how those triangles form, and it's all based on your monadic ray. So, you know, all the way from the very top to the bottom, the constitution of the universe and the constitution of man. Now, you know, constitution of the universe, how far can we go? We can't really get beyond the seven cosmic planes, although there are many, many more. There are, according to the Tibetan, 10 dimensions of cosmos. And each one of the whole group of cosmic planes is only one of those dimensions. We can't talk too much about that, but we can infer what the structure may be and how it is absolutely universal. And so we have to triangulate our lives here below, which for practical purposes and for immediate purposes means that we begin to live as souls. We then will live as triads, we then will live as monads, and the triangularity will not cease. It will go on. So we're into a huge, huge subject, which is both practical and theoretically vast. And maybe we can, you know, address both sides of that particular equation. With more certainty, of course, in terms of the practicality and that which is near at hand, living as a soul. And transforming the etheric network will help all of humanity live more as a soul. We really need it now. Things are pretty severe at the moment, and the danger is great. Don't want to be melodramatic. The danger is great. And we disciples, there have to be enough of us now to really help tip the balance in favor of the coming hierarchy in Christ and of the divine plan. Are there other thoughts you would like to, let's see now, it looks like, Brett, is it?
We have a couple more written questions, one from Helen, continuing what she was asking.
Okay, from Helen Drusus. Okay, and what does she say there?
Yes, in his name. Does it make a difference if it is said out loud, given that Vega may be a throat setter body?
You know, it's like the Om. Sometimes DK calls upon us to affirm it, and it may have a more physical effect. There's other times that he asks us to listen to the silent Om and appreciate the way that it is used. I personally use both. I personally, when things are very, very insistent, I would speak out loud. But of course, there are subtler approaches as well for good meditators, and they can use the more silent interior approach. I would say both should be used. Tuya, is that you there?
Yes, I was just thinking. In one sense, it is more powerful to say aloud when we think that we are part of the planetary throat center, and our task is exactly use the words that we are using them for the tools of manifestation. So, but we cannot have all the time possibility. We may be in the somewhere in the grocery store, wherever, and we have those needs. So of course, it is important to learn also that way. But if we have possibility, so then we use the words, because that is our task, to bring these energies into the most lowest level as possible.
When we're thinking manifestationally, I agree with you. And sometimes he says that he talks about the Om, sacred word, and he says the word that is used silently and interiorly, and that you must listen for the Om as it is being sounded by the higher beings. So there's another approach there which is more invocative. I agree, and I think that both are necessary and find their place, you know.
Yes, yeah. Because it has to be related with the meditative process and mental process as well. So in one sense, it is more powerful to be in silence. But yet, because of using these energies into the lower worlds, as the magicians, they are saying those mantras aloud. So it's both ways. Yes,
yeah,
as you said.
I think both, and I think that's correct. Yeah, and Starling, thank you for putting your the links there, and someone has already thanked you for the dissemination of the material. Look, we all, you know, we're all working at this. We all have to share what we do. And that, you know, like, was it Master Moria? He said, well, when you're looking for what's called the transfiguration, it's not just found in one place. It's the aggregate of all the points of illumination within humanity, and that demonstrates the true transfiguration. So each one of us has a certain modicum of light, and we share that light and illumine each other. It's a mutual illumination society, and you know, that's the value of our group work together. I think it can be very successful. Okay, Brett, what else do we have here?
Anything? We have a long series of questions from John, and then another shorter one from John as well.
Okay, am I seeing it, or is it?
It's further towards the beginning.
Oh, toward the beginning. Uh-huh. Okay, well, you know, maybe, John, it won't be possible to deal with everything, but let's take a look, huh? Regarding my statement, is that about the World War? You remember, is this where it begins? Is this it,
yes,
Brett?
Yes, that's the long
okay,
one.
You
yes,
mentioned
good.
That the Tibetan had said that it might have been possible to keep the conflict on the, well, on the, at least not on the physical plane. You know, I call it the realm of the psyche, namely the astral body and the mental body, and he says that's where it must be now. It must not precipitate. So I call that the psyche and psychological, even though the true psyche is the soul. So in our current times, is the great struggle on the mental and the aesthetic plane. Well, I guess we'd have to see what we mean by aesthetic plane.
Etheric.
Yes, and on the astral plane, where the great proportion of glamour is found. This is the truly dangerous area. It may lack a certain reality because it's somehow a combination of higher influences and the response of the lower substance. There may be matter of an astral nature, but the forms found thereon are pretty much man-made. So we must include the astral plane. Germany was the most dangerous of the triad, of the Axis triad. Italy represented illusion, Japan Maya, but Germany represented glamour, and that particular force was the most misleading and the most powerful. If we cannot resolve the conflict, will it manifest on? Yeah, well, it just may. And the Tibetan said, "This is a possibility which can be envisioned." And basically, he's talking there about having to start humanity all over again. And he really did write that. Actually, it was Brett that alerted me to this 10 years ago, probably, Brett. I don't remember. But it was in the introduction of Problems of Humanity, and it has since been removed. You don't see that around very much. But the Tibetan gave a dire warning about the next war, which would be religious war, if it occurred, and would involve the intervention of Shambhala, which has never been the case, he said. At least he must mean something specific about this. Also, could you speak a bit about what is meant by a sixth ray? Well, here's what I meant, that because of the sixth ray is so very, very strong, and really it has another 21,000 years to run on a higher level, Shambhala might be forced in order to preserve the intention of the divine purpose as executed by Sanakumara, might be forced to intervene in a way that would be very destructive as far as humanity is concerned. Now, we came very close to that already. Back in 1917, and this is always, I mean, my jaw drops and I can't hardly believe it, the solar logos almost intervened in the First Great War. DK doesn't elaborate that. He said, fortunately, humanity itself solved the problem. So sometimes these, I mean, that's the solar logos, and now we're simply talking about the center of will on our planet. So it just depends about whether the sixth ray becomes too destructive and whether this religious war, which could sidetrack everything, does precipitate. We already see the possible seeds of it, and that's why we have to proceed very, very carefully. It could manifest on the physical plane. DK warns us about it, says it must not happen, and obviously the disciples have a big responsibility. Also, could you speak a bit about what is meant by, yeah, so it's not a sixth ray Shambolic intervention, it's the Shambolic intervention because the sixth ray is out of hand. Yes, it's recrudescence is too great, and it has to be somehow swept aside. Is this reminiscent of the struggle which took place at the close of the last great round? Yes, it is reminiscent. The idea was the attempt will be made to destroy the Aryan race by fire. That is how DK discusses it, but in a way, the Armageddon has already been in process ever since the First World War, Second World War. The third phase of the Armageddon has to be retained on the level of mind and emotion. And already you see the battle being fought there as well, with occasional flare-ups and explosions on the physical plane, but a general physical explosion must not be allowed. Okay, anyway, that's my response to you, John, for those particular questions, and obviously we all have our take on these various questions. So, you know, this is from my point of view, it's a very serious situation at the moment, and humanity needs the ageless wisdom as never before, so that it can gain a larger perspective and realize the fire that it is playing with at this time. We do have irrationality. We do have these crazy visions of a material heaven, and we have a disrespect for the earth. And to the sixth ray lord, one of the ray lords said, why do you kick the ball, the earth, like a ball? You know, is it not good enough for you? And there are many people on the sixth ray who literally don't care much about the physical plane. They're very happy to go to the heaven that they imagine for themselves, which is full of illusion, full of fallacy. And it could be derailing the evolutionary process. And so that might be the reason why the very destructive, I'm sure, Shambolic intervention would be required. Okay, thank you for those questions. Anything else? Anything else? Excuse me. Phoenix always dries me up a bit. It's pretty hot here. Look, friends, as Starling said, and there is this marvelous section. If I can find it. Wait a second. Here we go. The Esoteric Foundation of Triangles, Science of Triangles, where is it? There it is. Yeah, it's from page 400 to 500, and he goes into the matter in great depth. Now, we will study these things. I know not all of you are astrologers, and look, if you want to, I've already, in a way, done this. There are recordings, webinar book recordings, on Makara, in which I've gone through the entire Esoteric Astrology book, and I've given my commentary. Okay, but what I didn't do is have the chance to interact with each other on these subjects. It's just more or less of a lecture and elaboration, and it's there, and I probably went into quite a few things, but we need to assimilate the teaching. Now, you know, in the year 2025 and following, the third installment of Master DK's teaching is scheduled to emerge. Now, you know, whether they keep to the schedule, I think they will, okay? But DK says you must assimilate the teaching. And if you don't assimilate the teaching, more cannot be given. So the kind of work that Tui and I are doing and others are doing on the webinars and the broadcast is all for the sake of assimilation, so we can make ourselves ready for the third and still more illuminative revelation, which is due to come after the next great conclave of the hierarchy. So we'll be doing a lot of this radio work. Radio work, okay. He says the teaching would go forth over the radio after 1975. But the radio is our new internet and all of our communicative possibilities. So we'll be helping you, we'll be helping ourselves assimilate the great teaching. Now, of course, it's beyond us to do that totally. We just can't, because, you know, Master DK is writing for also for initiates of the fourth degree or third degree, or even masters studying the books of Patanjali, the third and fourth book. We can't assimilate it all, but we can come much closer to preparing our minds and hearts, to prepare the minds and hearts of others for the reappearance of the Christ and his hierarchy. And we owe it to ourselves and to everybody else to apply ourselves to do that. Okay. Now, as a matter of fact, we have not yet decided. Now, you know, every Wednesday we have a triangles meditation. Okay. But we have not yet decided on the day or the timing of this new series where we're really going to develop the triangles work in fuller detail. And we'll let you know as soon as we figure that out. And it won't be long. It won't be long. It's coming up soon. Okay, any other questions? Was there something from Rebecca Frith? I thought I saw something from Rebecca.
There is. But it, well, what we have is a series of thank yous to you, to Tuya, to Starbuck.
Okay. Well, then, thank you, and thank you. Well, look, I'll tell you what, friends. I don't want to overdo this, and I don't want to yet get into this huge section. What I want to do right now is just have a little reflection, okay, if that's okay with you. Just a little reflection. And maybe we'll put this chart on the, you know, it shows the triangular nature of the constitution of man. So we really have to learn how to think in terms of triangles and somehow balance the contending pairs of opposites. You know, we're such a, you know, in the United States anyway, such a bipolar country. I mean, you know, with a sixth-rate personality and a Gemini personality sign, ideals are fighting with each other all the time. We need a balancing factor. In one of the recent groups, I read the fourth ray integration formula, which said basically move on a pace. You know, the conflict appears from the point of vantage point at which you stand, but you will find there are not two but one, not war but peace, not isolation but a heart which rests upon the center. We need to realize, and under the growing fourth ray, we're going to be able to do that. We're going to be able to put the pairs of opposites together so that it's not constant friction wearing each other down. Although from this friction may appear a vision of the plan and a clarification of values and a clarification of what is good and what is evil. So this friction that we are having to go through, it has its purpose. But eventually comes the harmonizing aspect of the fourth ray and the era of peace, which is promised, you know, after the Armageddon. So we have a big job, everybody. We have a big job. Okay, let's have a little reflection. So here we are, you know, some 50, 60 of us as souls, soul-infused personality, soul-infusing personalities, in different countries and continents. Somehow all related to each other. And we envision the great network of triangles rapidly forming, and our role within that as we whether it's just one triangle or 10 or 50, whatever, how we engage with that network. Our little network of love and wisdom, of light, of goodwill, contributing to the glorification of the entire network. We're approaching a very important time. The exact time of that Pluto-Vega conjunction. And Vega is always opposite Sirius at this historical period in cosmos. When the drastic power of Pluto is really an initiatory power, has to be employed by us more fully. Pluto is present at every one of the first five initiations quite strongly, and even rules the fifth initiation amazingly. And we're going to strengthen that network, expand that network, purify our relations and expel from our relations that which does not serve the plan. We're going to use Pluto to do this, and the as much as we can tune in on it, if you know, it's a huge solar logos, the power of Vega to enunciate the plan even and purpose even a wider sense. The workers are here and their strength is adequate to the need. And we've got to grow this network of triangles. Not everybody has to understand every little theoretical detail. But we do have to work practically within the network with light, with love, goodwill, and with the will to good. So we're going to really put on the pressure, put on the steam during the remaining years of the year of the Forerunner. And there should be much clarification about where humanity stands by the time we're reaching 2024, 2025. If we stand steady, we can be of a great service. So inwardly, as soul-infusing personalities, let us resolve, each in our own way, in our own sphere, to do all we can to strengthen the triangles network, improve its quality, its depth of feeling, as DK says, and provide a vehicle which the great Buddhas of activity can use in case of emergency. There's a whole section on those Buddhas, and we're going to study that too. Amazing beings who were planetary logoi in the previous solar system. So let us work together. Wednesdays we have our triangles meditation, whether it's at 5 a.m. 5 p.m. GMT or 6 a.m. 6 p.m. as we're now experimenting at this time. And then we will have our in-depth, more academic approach. And we'll focus on these 100 pages, which touch so many factors. Now, it doesn't exhaust by any means what DK has said about triangles. So close to his heart, no. But it is a real foundation. And we all might learn something about esoteric astrology and rheology while we're doing it. So now we'll close our little reflection with the sounding of the great invocation. And you can, you know, say it aloud or inwardly, however you wish. But we keep ourselves on self-mute at least, because the time lag would make it impossible to remain coherent. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Tuya and I want to thank you all for attending this discussion, little meditation. And where English is not your first language, I hope you can absorb some of it, at least the energy. And we're very happy to have the speaker of any language here. And we'll shortly let you know when we will continue with this work. But remember that tomorrow, well, tomorrow, maybe it's already today, the 15th at 2:30 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time, Universal Time, we will, if the gods of technology support us, we will have our broadcast of the Pluto Vega opposed Sirius service meditation. So we hope you can join us on the broadcast, or if not, then when we post it, then access it from the Makara website. I guess that's it for the moment, Tuya. Do you have anything you want to say?
Oh, only thank you for everybody for your participation, and let us go forth and work and work and work.
Those were the Tibetan's last words to his written words. Work, my brothers. Well, okay. We'll do it. We'll see as many of you as possible tomorrow for the Pluto-Vega conjunction meditation. Bye for now, and this will be posted on Makara shortly, and Brett and I will figure out what category we'll put it in, and we'll be letting you know. So thank you very much for your attendance. So good to see you all here, and onward. Okay. Bye-bye for now.